Welcome among
the Rollist.
So, pandemic. A while ago, I recorded an episode called The New Normal. It turns out it was not the new normal because we're back in lockdown.
Well, it's a new normal, this normal.
Well, yeah, the normal of getting in and out of lockdown and, yeah, being stuck with whether we have the pleasure or for the people, not so much the pleasure of being stuck with. So this episode is dedicated to someone very special to me with who I am stuck now.
No, thank you. I feel so flattered.
You don't feel stuck with me?
No. So,
well, no, I'm not sure about that. Well, who are you for people who might be jumping in and it's their first episode?
Hi, I'm Persephilia. I'm Kalum's better half. We've been together 13 years, I think.
Yeah, we celebrate it.
Yeah, in October. So yeah, I already came on the podcast, but it was early beginning. There was a food special.
Yeah, yeah, you were a proper guest, and then you were on the Chris Birch episode because it was your birthday.
Yes.
You were on the episode for which we went to see Beck Hill and then Rogue One.
Yes.
You've been on Café Rollist several times.
I have, yes.
So there's a little tag with a link where you can find all the episodes where you were, or at least people should be able again to use that feature once we sort it out on our brand new website, because it's currently broken, but my brother is working hard on that. Without further ado, because you have a lot of things you want to talk about, our traditional question. How would you explain, describe, what is a tabletop role-playing game to someone who has absolutely no clue of what it is?
I would say, for me, it's a shared narrative with a main person who structures the narrative. So there's a universe, there's things happening, and then you play in that narrative structure and make an impact on how things unfold. And together, there's a dialogue with the GM and the player who creates a rich, exciting universe story that unfolds.
So you draw the line. GM-less tabletop role-playing games are not role-playing games.
No, I do. I mean, they are. I mean, yeah, you already got me. I am not a fan of GM-less. I have tried a couple of times in the past, and I mean, there was a bit of a mixed bag, I would say, experience, but I'm not a fan where I feel like you kind of making it either too easy or too complicated. It kind of takes the fun out of it for me.
Yeah, you should try a few of the more structured GM-less game I tried recently.
Mm-hmm.
I should play again to my GM-less game, Pervis Gondo, the life-saving magic of inventory, currently available on itch.io. You haven't played it in a while.
No, I haven't played since we playtested it in the beginning.
Yeah, I think it was the actual first playtest. What was your very first introduction to the concept of tabletop role-playing game? Because you had some exposure before I brought you in.
Yes. I mean, I think I was always been a bit of a geek, and I was like, people would see that in me, that there was like this role-playing
nerd.
Nerd inside me. I remember in high school, there was a good friend of mine, and he was like, oh, I've just discovered this thing. We're around the table and we tell stories and we throw dice and you should come. It's a lot of fun. And I was like, nah, I don't think so.
Was it the big D and the D, or was it?
I think it is. He didn't really give me details.
It was in Flanders.
Yes. Then when I started working, I befriended someone on Facebook and he also told me like, oh, you should do this. I think you would like it. I was like, what's up with all these people? And then I met you. And
they were not telling you weird things. I see your future. You're going to be really into this. You're going to meet a podcaster.
And basically, I met you. And after 1 week, I came over to your place one night and you said...
First, after one night, I changed my Facebook status to in a relationship. Hey, that's the only time I did it for younger people who had Facebook for a long time. I did it once on Facebook and that was the right time. No pressure on people.
You're lucky that it stuck. Okay, so let's go back. Week one, we're together. I come over to your place one night. And you tell me, tonight we're creating your character. There's this thing I want to set up. I want us to play Nephilim. I've found other players. Or you were going to find other players.
I found them online. I found them on Couchsurfing.
Yeah.
I had one, a seasoned player, Michelle, who is a sweetheart to play with and a sweetheart with new players also. So it was perfect. And then I found three players through Couchsurfing.
There was Lavinia.
Lavinia, that's it. And a couple.
Yeah.
They played two sessions and then the...
Just two?
No more than two. I don't think more than two. More than one, I think. But yeah, maybe three? I don't think so.
It was so long ago.
So yeah, that first experience. So we started with the character creation for Nephilim.
The character was called Persophilia.
Yeah, because Persophilia, for people who might be confused in our interactions, because there are people I'm somewhat close to online, I still call you Persophilia with them, but sometimes I might call you your real name. And sometimes they think I hang out with two women. But yeah, you're the only one person. It's just that you have a pseudonym like I do.
Yeah.
Where does that come from, Persophilia?
It was, so I was just throwing together two characters that I wanted to be inspired by. So Persephone from Greek myths, who's the daughter of Demeter, who's married off to Ares. No, Ares, Hades.
I did not realize, but in our Nephilim episode, I referenced Persephone.
Oh, I don't remember that.
And I also interviewed Aimé Carter, who wrote a YA novel based on Persephone and Demeter. See, It's all coming out together, man.
Oh, right. And the second character is Ophelia from Hamlet. Very tragic figure.
Yeah, very, it's kind of grim. Either you kidnapped into the underworld or you throw yourself in a river to go there.
Yeah, all right. Let's not go too deep in that, maybe. I think I had fun making that character sheet. You had to, like, select your background and your past. And I had to select the element and I took Earth and then I was, you had to select if you're a Mandragore and don't know what the other options were, but I thought that was really cool. And then we started playing and I was completely clueless and I hated it until at the end of the campaign or until we stopped, I guess. At the very end, I started liking it.
So it's kind of representative of two things about you with role-playing game. The first one to discuss is that you tend to have a nostalgia of games even when you didn't quite enjoy them. So you often, I remember when we played that and I'm like, you didn't like that campaign and you were happy to leave it. So you often have better memories than experience of the game.
Yeah, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Maybe that tells me that maybe I should just enjoy it more.
Yeah, probably. Long term, it's better, I guess, than the opposite. Like, you would have a great experience, but then terrible memories each time. But, yeah, and the other thing is that there's a difference between the characters you create, what you think you want to play, and what you actually enjoy playing.
Yeah. But, I mean, how could I have known I was my first character back then?
So. Yeah, of course. And me, as the game master, was trying to curate an experience. Now I know you, so I would advise you to go with fire. I mean, earth was fine for you, but yeah, fire is more, it's more your thing, actually.
Mm-hmm.
In-game, you like to punch things.
Yes.
In real life, that doesn't happen so often.
And then we moved to London.
And then we moved to London. Like that, we just moved to London. Mm. In conditions, to be fair, which were much easier to move to London.
Yeah, back then. And we started playing at La Guilde des Rôlistes Francophones de Londres.
yeah, I moved to London slightly sooner than you, and I sent you a message. I found these people. I made a pub with them. You're gonna like them.
Yeah, I kind of had a baptism of fire with them because we started with a murder party.
A LARP.
Yeah.
A live action role playing youth contained to someone's apartment.
Yeah.
Although we did something illegal for that LARP, we got gun props which are black, not bright yellow, which apparently is illegal in the UK.
Yeah, I understand why. But
yeah, I understand too. But yeah, we moved recently and the culture was a bit different. In Belgium and France, people are a bit less scared of bits of plastic. I like this LARP, but it's quite something to get into your first LARP to enjoy.
Yeah, I was, again, completely clueless, didn't really know how to engage, or I think even the whole story plot just got over my head at one point. I was just too scared to really enjoy the thing, I guess.
Well, it was pretty much Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
There were a bunch of bank robbers and their hostages and...
Yeah.
I think you were one of the hostages. I was a bank robber.
I think I was a journalist. I'm not sure anymore.
Yeah, I think you were a journalist. And of course, the bank robber turned against one another. And it turns out that the hostages actually were not that innocent. They knew the robbers or they were there for a reason.
Yeah.
What's your best memory of La Guild?
Honestly, they were fantastic. When we came into London, we only had a handful of friends.
Well, we didn't have any friends,
not really.
Really,
yeah.
We had housemates who drove us literally... Well, they were putting us in very stressful situation. They were the cause of...
That's another story. I don't want to open that can of worms.
But yeah.
But yeah, I remember the beginning was quite lonely. I think the first 5 months we didn't socialize that much. I mean, and it was fine because we had this whole big city that was so exciting and all these nice restaurants to go to and places to visit on the weekend. And but then, you know, at one point you kind of want to socialize and meet people. And the guild was like a very warm hug. All the people were very lovely. They had, you know, meals and playing squash. You know, and then there was a role playing. I think I started on the One Ring, which I'm really fond of.
Yeah, with Francois, who was my guest quite a while ago.
And then there was Dark Earth with Orp, which was really cool as well.
Do you remember some one-shots you played? We did that one with, we played Monks. It was a double table. So there were two tables playing in parallels and mixing with one another, knowing them. So one table was the monks and the one table was the travelers moving into the monastery.
Yeah, I remember a game of Paranoia, which was quite fun as well.
Was it the same I played or did we play it in separate game? Mine was there. We had to come up with a branding for a new sector.
Yeah, I think it was the same.
That was nice, yeah.
We played Mage with Little. That was a lot of fun as well. That was like a mini campaign, wasn't it? There was Pavillon Noir with Enox. Lots of really good games. So that, I think that consolidated my love for role-playing. Will everyone I know be murdered in the cold? None of humankind. Will I just leave my mind? If I'm gonna wake up one morning, it feel like I'm on fire. Oh, they gonna put me out of misery. Oh, they gonna hang me out of the wire. Paranoia. Paranoia. Woo! Paranoia. The internet is alive and it feeds upon your soul. Wait till you're too weak, cause then it's gonna swallow you whole. I can't comprehend what's going on. I got a satellite in my hand. I just wanna make a phone call. Every word I say is heard by a man. Paranoia. Paranoia. Hey! I got paranoia. Paranoia, paranoia, I got paranoia, I got paranoia, alright! Well, you had your first go at
game mastering around that time.
As well, yes. It's actually thanks to a member of La Guilde, Kundin, who bought a book of Judge Dredd and at a flea market, the old edition by Games Workshop, and asked if someone was interested. And I was, I don't know why, I said, yes, I would love to have that book. I think it might have been around the movie coming out, maybe. Not sure.
Dredd. I don't remember where we were when we saw Dredd. Did we? We were in the UK already.
Yeah,
when we
yeah.
saw Dredd.
I read the book. It was a pretty straightforward system. I love the universe. It's really goofy. Oh, and also, I think I played the one shot at Dragon Meet before that.
Oh, yeah, at your first Dragon Meet you
yeah.
played. Was it the same Judge Dredd or was it another one?
No, I think it was another one. The character sheet is different. But that was a lot of fun. Maybe that's a good segue of talking about conventions, because I think those are so much fun and I really miss them.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, do you remember your first convention and me telling you, you're going to come to a convention, it's going to be great.
For me, the experience is just like, as a kid going to like a theme park, going to Disneyland. You have all those shops with all the things that you want to buy, the dice and all the lovely people that you meet that have become your friend and your group. So much hugs as well are exchanged.
Yeah, I miss the hugs.
Yeah, then just playing new games. I remember being a bit scared the first time. It was a Judge Dredd game. I was at a table with four dudes and one of them had this skull tattooed on his arm. And he was like the sweetest guy, actually. So it's like, I shouldn't really judge anyone on his cover. And I mean, everybody I've met on conventions have been lovely. Had a really good game. It was really a lot of fun. We did a hot dog hunt. So it means that you go into Cursed Earth. Is that outside of the city limits of Mega City 1? Yeah, I'm not going to say more because I'm going to use actually that idea for a game.
Oh, cool. I've never been outside Mega City 1. I played a short campaign with Encounter Roleplay. I played two games with you, but I still have not stepped out.
Hot dog hunt in the Cursed Earth.
Cool, I look forward to that.
So yeah, and then we've done Grog Meet in Manchester.
That was nice, just once.
Yeah, I actually played Judge Dredd there as well. In a dungeon call with an actual dungeon.
Ah, you did that
with
the Dwarven Forge thing.
That was really cool. And UK Games Expo, which has very dear to our heart, I guess.
Did you play a game there? I don't remember.
I did. I played a game of werewolves. I played a test game for someone, a bit of Starship Troopers universe.
I love the core.
Yeah, that one. So we went...
Three times?
No, two times maybe.
No.
Because we went once and we stayed in Birmingham in that easy hotel.
Yeah.
And then the next year you said we're going to book a hotel on the premises because it was too much of a hassle taking the train each time.
And Soren was already there that second time?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I really thought we went three times. Maybe we didn't, just...
No, I don't think we did.
It. Yeah, I'd really like to go back. I think it's happening end of July, beginning of August this year, but yeah, I don't think we'll be able to go for many reasons. I'm very curious, plugging my game again, Paris Gondo, The Life-Saving Magic of Inventory, available on itch.io. Link in the description of this episode. I think the next convention I will do, I might be behind the table selling that game, hopefully. I think that's sort of my next objective, if I can cover the upfront costs. So, all our things now, because the now is expanding. So, what is it like for you? Now, where are you at in, not really your situation, but how do you perceive role-playing game? What's your understanding of what it is, what you like about it?
I would say the now, how I perceive role-playing, it's really difficult, I would say, since I've become a mom.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So when I was on maternity leave, I think we kind of continued playing as regularly. Oh, it felt like it anyway.
Yeah, we had a window for any parents to be there. There's actually a window from right after your baby is born till the moment when your baby is able to move around in a meaningful fashion, which you must take advantage of to go to restaurants, to travel, which we didn't.
No, we didn't do that much.
To go on walks because it's still light enough for you to carry around a meaningful amount of miles and kilometers. And to play games because they cannot reach the table and grab your dice and stuff and tokens.
So yeah, we did lots of those pictures of, you know, someone being at the table when we're playing role-playing games. We went to the UK Games Expo with him. So that was really nice. I also had a wandering table with Hakadosh and Roll Any Dice, our rat team. When I was on maternity leave, it was so good to just leave Soren with you for the afternoon and just go off and have fun with other adults. But then when I started working, you know, you only got the weekend with your baby and you just kind of want to make most of it. So at that point, there was a shift, I would say. It was for me, the game has to be worth it.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting to point out that most of our games at home were afternoon games.
Or someone else's home.
You would bake something, it would take the whole afternoon. Yeah, it was very comfy and so on. Once you started working again, you didn't stop playing, but you played in the evening with London RPG community at Bad Moon Cafe.
Yeah, or I played the One Ring and I went to Hakadosh and Totoshan's place. And that was also a whole afternoon. And that was really, really nice. As a mom, you just want to spend as much time as you can with your baby. But then you also just want to have some me time as well. And I guess it's finding that balance that's really hard. And you do want to, that me time, it can be, okay, socializing with other people, can be role playing. It can be maybe just doing something by myself. So you have to also decide what's the priority for you at that moment.
That sort of parallels my own experience at some point. I mean, my availability is much bigger than yours because I'm not working for the moment. But I still wanted to make the most of my game sessions. So I've been more and more careful about understanding what I liked and seeking that out. On one hand, that means looking for those things. On the other hand, still try things. But when you try something and it doesn't quite work, you're like, sorry, folks, this table is not for me. To mention something, that's really the philosophy of the Gauntlet. Open table is something, if you cannot show up at the session, if in the middle of session you are needed somewhere else, that you don't feel well, or you're just not enjoying yourself, it's open table. You were encouraged to say, okay, I'm sorry, I need to go. I did that with a couple of campaigns, including with close friends, where I was like, okay, that's not my thing. When you have little time, it's even more important to understand that and try to seek out specific experience which really match your taste.
For sure. And I mean, you've always been there to coach me as well, because I have a difficult tendency to say no. Always want to try, or maybe I'm in thinking, I'll give it another go. Maybe I'll have fun next time.
No, stick around. Yeah. Just like, no, just leave. You're not having fun
there. But I think we've debated this quite a lot of times. And if you're not having fun, you're not bringing fun to the table as well. And you're just actually hindering the table as well. And yeah, our time is precious. I mean, it's not because I'm a mom that my time is more precious than anyone else. Definitely not. I think everybody's time is precious and they should be clear what their priorities are.
To sort of close that, what's your understanding of what you like and what you seek in a role-playing game?
I think I'm still figuring it out. I know that I like to have some agency. I like saving the day, as I call it. And it doesn't mean that like I'm the big hero, but that I have the room to come up with a creative solution or have, you know, a meaningful interaction with another player and come to something that feels like we had a good time together.
It's interesting when you say agency, because at the same time, from my experience with you, there's really a right balance for you, because you like agency, you like impacting what's going on. But I would say you wouldn't like a sandbox, a place where you are thrown and say, okay, you can do whatever. Do you want to go to this valley over there where stuff is happening, or do you want to go in the mountains, or do you want to to talk with all those people? You like it to be clear. You like to be given a mission, I think.
Definitely. I need a structure. I need something to react against. I can't just... If we were like in a sandbox, I would definitely not be the one taking the lead. Unless I feel like it's becoming desperate and what people are deciding is really bugging me.
Yeah. You have those moments of being frustrated with how things are. They're not going fast enough or not in the direction you want. And a big argument coming up. We had that in Dark Earth between my character, Gibson, and yours.
I vaguely remember that, yeah.
It was a bit smothering. Yeah, but you had it's interesting, you had a game which you especially enjoyed last weekend.
Yes.
It's funny because you were not, because of the circumstances which changed repeatedly, you were not so, and circumstances of the table, but also outside of the table. You were not so keen on playing.
So we were supposed to play Monster of the Week, but one player topped out and there was this discussion of like, oh, shall we just play next week? And then the GM very kindly offered to play a Monster Party, Party Monster.
By Ursi Dice?
By Ursi Dice. And I was just, it was Sunday. It was a beautiful day in the Easter weekend.
The only beautiful day.
It was the only beautiful day. I tried to do too many things because I had to call my mom and she kind of got upset when I told her that I was going to call her the next day. And I was at the park with Soren and he was having a blast. Yeah, I was like, maybe I should just cancel because, you know, your head's not in it. And I did go and I had a blast. It was really fun.
So what did you do? What did you enjoy especially about that game?
So the game is very heavily inspired by Buffy.
Yeah, the serial number are barely filed on that.
I played a obnoxious cheerleader. So for defense, I was kind of a Cordelia. And you get a goal for the evening and you're at a club and there's a monster. And in this case, there were vampires. Yeah, we had to find a friend and get him out of the claws of the vampires and try to stop their scheme of turning everybody into a vampire. So we were a three-player game. We did it through Discord and it was fun. It was just, I don't know, the characters, we were very easily into doing some role play, you know, being in character, which was a lot of fun. The takeaway that I had from it, it's one of those moments, and I think you play and you're like, oh, I miss playing more regularly and having this more in my life. My eye is ticking as I speak with myself about what I'm missing. Ain't nobody else can tell. Thank you.
So we have talked about how you started role-playing games, the past, I guess. What about the future? What?
We still have 1 point in the present online versus around the table.
Okay, go ahead. So online versus around the table. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, I just wanted to share my experience. There's a French expression, faute de gris, on mange du merle.
Yeah, I find it unfair. I don't know what the English equivalent, which is...
If you can't eat this, then you have to eat that.
Yeah.
Definitely online is not the preferred one for me. I know that you've been thriving with it.
I think it's different, but I would not say that it's worse than playing around the table.
It has its advantages, for sure.
Even in terms of play itself, I find it can be as immersive, if not more immersive, than around the table. There's less distraction and you could be more into the game than you are around most tables, at least.
For me, that's more distraction.
You say that, but when we are around the table, you are looking after our guests, you are fetching the cake.
Well, that's when I play at home. I usually like to play at someone else's place, and then I just concentrate on snacking and playing.
So what was your first experience playing online?
I did a few games with RPG community, playing my Gnome Ranger on their dungeon games in the Kantas universe. It was fun, but their tables are quite big. I think it's 5-6 players.
Yeah, that's the thing with me though, is online is great, but never more than 4 players. And it's better if it's 3 players. And to be honest, even around the table, I'm more and more leaning into the idea that actually it's better with 4 players. But beyond that, it's too much.
Less is more.
Yeah, you spend too much time waiting for your turn and so on.
Then I got the opportunity to play with some colleagues from work, and we played for 6 months every Tuesday.
You played Dragon Heist, right?
Yes.
Oh, did it go? What did you think of Dragon Heist?
It was a lot of fun, lots of fun adventures. The cool thing was that we played with only 3 players, so that was just perfect. You know, there was a consistency, so we played every week, so it went quite fast, and, you know, there was a quick pace.
You played the whole thing, the whole Dragon Heist thing?
I think we did, yeah. I played a few mask games with July. I really love how she's GMing her masks now. She always like, oh, when I have an idea, I'll contact you guys and we'll do another game. We had one session where we actually just talked and acted out as teenagers, which was, you know, it was kind of hard, but very interesting at the same time. Trying to get back into like a teenager mindset and how you're very emotional. So that was great. I guess it also ties in with the fact that I've created a new group.
Does it have a name, your group?
It does. It's called Ladies and Gentle Them.
Oh, I love that.
So it's a women and non-binary group. I know people will have conflicted emotions about it, but I guess after being a play for 8 years and just noticing that I'm often either the only girl or, you know, in a minority at the table, I was thinking, oh, I wish once I would be at a table with just non-male. And I was like, okay, this year I'm going to make that happen. So I contacted July and we started like reaching out to other people we know. We have a player pool, we have a GM pool, we have a few games already, and we're trying, you know, to set up more games. So that's really exciting.
Is it a private thing with people just being co-opted, or do you have any kind of public front that people can reach out to? Or well, do you have any ambitions with that to make it? Do you have a logo, t-shirts, and so on?
No, not yet. It's a private affair at the moment. I think Myra posted it on No More Damsels at one point. I think we want to keep it small at the moment and see how it goes and grow from there, I guess. I know there's actually other groups that exist like that, so definitely not the only one. Groups that are LGBTQ friendly.
Cool. You still need to try a game with the gauntlet. I think you might really like it.
Yeah, I should.
We should look up to... They just announced the next Gauntlet Community Open Gaming event. It's going to be from June 24th to June 27th. But we won't be able to join them because we should be finally visiting our family abroad. So, yeah, crossing finger for that. But if that doesn't happen... Hey, we can play with the gauntlet.
So yeah, The future.
The future. You only talk about the future now?
Yeah.
The jabs. Will it be AstraZeneca or biotech, or will I get 5G by taking it? That's a brilliant future. The brave new world waiting for us.
I guess when I think about the future, I think about a little one and playing with him, role-playing games.
Oh. Yeah. We got a bit of time before,
2 years, maybe?
2 years, five-year-old.
I'm sure you can do a game with a five-year-old.
I mean, we can role-play. We already do it. We pretend to be ghosts or lions or a bunch of things, but structured with a rule system. Or do you see that? Do you already know systems or settings? What would you like to start with? And it won't be Dungeons & Dragons.
You played Tales of Equestria?
I didn't know. I never played it.
Oh, I thought you did. That seemed like a really fun one. I fantasize about running the One Ring for Soren and his playmates. I don't know why.
Maybe because you loved the Lord of the Rings.
I do, and I hope that he'll love it too.
I'm more leaning towards Guillaume Gentil published a game called Milky Monsters, which seems especially for children. From what I've seen, Tales of Equestria seems very good, but the system might still be somewhat a bit complicated. Or I've heard good things about No Thank You Evil, which I haven't read yet, but seems nice because it's got asymmetric rules. The parents or the big brother or big sister, or maybe his friends, can play while a younger one plays with slightly different rules.
Okay.
Guillaume Gentil played Paris Gondo, the life-saving magic of inventorying, with his children. And they are really into role-playing game now, and they are quite young. So we could play my game.
That is true,
Drawing on the card instead of making a description. Yeah, I'm very happy with the picture of that Guillaume posted online.
It was very cute. Loved it.
What do you think you're going to bring him into the hobby? I tend to lean always to Contep's, what was it called?
Yeah, Contep psychology.
Contep psychology. That's a daddy's and mummy's thing. That's for a grown-up. You cannot play this game. Because if we push it in this direction, I think he will be like, ugh.
Yeah, definitely not pushing it. I guess we can make a call out to listeners and tell us how they did it. Definitely, we don't want to scare him off. Or I guess it's when you were little that you went to all those walking clubs with your mom and didn't like it. Oh, you did like it? I don't remember.
Depends. I mean, there were not that many kids there. There were some, but you don't really have much opportunities to engage with them. So I did not dislike the walking clubs. I mean, I like visiting places. I developed a distaste for the so-called countryside of Belgium, which I thought was a distaste for countryside. Now that I moved to the UK, I realized, no, it's because Belgium has no countryside. Nothing worth being called a countryside. So it's much nicer to do that in England.
For sure. But I mean, I already told you that I would really like him to read, or that we read to him the Lord of the Rings before he sees the movies and the Hobbit. So I think you have to give the culture. I think you have to cultivate the geek culture before you.
And it's tied to a chair and we read it to him.
For bedtime. You read a little bit every night. Are you? What's the problem?
He doesn't let me read that much. He's watching a lot of shows on TV. Of course, there's no way telling by the time he's five if he will have still any interest in any of those. But when I see the Octonauts, I think that could be a very cool and straightforward role-playing game.
I guess, yeah.
Which shows that he loves would you be the more interested into running a game into?
Tough question. What does
What's the worst? The worst one you would want. Like Postman Pat.
Postman Pat is nice.
It's okay. He's a bit useless, this guy. He's a bit annoying.
He's just filling his die hole every time.
Yeah, you know, I'm not annoyed by his failures, but I'm annoyed by his, I guess I'm going to be a bit late. And then he always ends with, I'm the best postman. No, you're not. A bit of self-awareness would be welcome here.
What else does he watch? Bing? Bing is a very troubling universe. Yeah. For the listeners who don't have watched the show yet, Bing is a anthropomorphic bunny.
A child bunny.
Yeah, a child bunny. And
Has
no parents. He has someone who looks after him that looks like a cuddly toy that's smaller than him.
Who's kind of staring at parents outside the screen like, see, that's how you do it, you monster. Plop does it right, you don't.
His friends are like an elephant, a panda.
That panda is...
Panda that likes to take his trousers off wherever he arrives. And yeah, there's no parents, and all the furniture is like parent size. So when he has to go to the sink, he has to like go on a little ladder.
Yeah, but his carer is a plushie who is smaller than him. So why is the furniture?
Where are all the parents? This is so troubling.
For me, it's paranoia. You know, the system you would use for Bing. It's like this weird dystopia.
You could do a paranoia with Bing. So yeah, that one would be the worst. I don't know, which show do I really like? I like Star.
Yeah.
Disney Plus.
There's a lot of shows in that format.
Yeah.
Gravity Falls.
Yeah.
Amphibia. Amphibia is really tabletop RPG. It feels like the people behind it, they know of tabletop role-playing game and they love them. There's kind of a vibe like that. Fangborn.
What's the other one? The Owl House.
The Owl House, yeah. Steven Universe, you're not as much a fan as I am, but that would be a cool... It deserves an official role-playing game.
Yeah.
I think there's an Avatar official role-playing game coming. The Dragon Prince. But that's when he's older, Dragon Prince. We're just name-dropping now, but yeah. I mean, the Octonauts.
The Octonauts.
I think they run into something, an animal or fish of some kind who needs being rescued.
And it can be very simple and... just like 1 hour play, which is probably the attention span that you'll have.
Yeah, 1 hour seems like a lot already.
Yeah.
We've got the action figures, so we could use them as miniatures. They got vehicles, and they travel the world. They're a team, so you can have different people.
No, yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, no, Octonauts is quite cool. Hello, Ninja. Salut, Ninja. Oui, salut. For people listening to that, it's just check Hello Ninja. At some point, they always transform from and move, or in my own interpretation, is that they're having a stroke.
No, they're just imagining that they're transforming.
Yeah, but it's just creepy on the stair. Okay, I get the imagining thing, and they jump on cushions and they picture themselves in this fantasy world. But it's just before they do that, they stare in their reflection and they say, Hello Ninja. Yeah, hello. It's kind of creepy.
Are you looking forward to playing with him? I know that you felt that it was a bit weird or like GMing with him. Is that something you still feel that way?
We're GMing with him?
Yeah.
I don't remember saying that.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I could see game mastering because I know quite a few people who do that for their kids. I mean, I never witnessed that, but it seems somewhat straightforward. It's just I like to keep my expectations really low. So until proven otherwise, he will hate everything we like. He won't have any interest in playing any tabletop role-playing game. And he will be very much into sports. It's not a judgment of people who like sports. It's just a judgment of my own taste and really a strong desire not to be standing or sitting next to a football pitch
every Sunday
or whatever. So at least if he does sport, I'd be very thankful if he could be a gymnast or a much better a fencer or a swimmer. But yeah, no soccer, no cricket, no
rugby.
No rugby, please, no. None of that. But yeah, my expectation is that he will be into race cars and so on in terms of interest.
It's horrible. I mean, we do have to have some influence on the little guy.
To a large extent, the stuff I love are stuff my parents didn't love. I mean, my father was into cars, soccer, and all of that. And I'm not. So my expectation is that it will work the other way around. So yeah, I guess he will hang out with his grandparents and dig that kind of stuff. You have a poster from a football player in his bedroom.
No, like, this is a call from me to all the parents listening. Please reassure me that you do have children that love the things you love.
Yeah, they are. I mean, Guillaume Gentil posted the other day, it was quite touching. He explained that his children came to him and asked him, oh, where's Milky Monster? We want to play. And he told them, well, I'm working now. I cannot run a game. And said, no. My big sister is going to run the game. So they were playing on their own without the intervention of the father. I recommend people to go check our episode about the never-ending story. There are stories from Carol Isham running Call of Cthulhu for 10 years old.
Okay.
And Sendalino running small games with her children. Yeah, and the children asking Senda to run Dungeons of Dragons for them. Which is hilarious because Senda doesn't like Dungeons and Dragons at all. And she spent her time promoting and designing indie games. So yeah, it can definitely happen, but I don't want to be disappointed. And I think the best way to make it happen is not to
manage expectations.
Yeah, manage expectations, but also not pressure.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That.
So we'll see that and tell him that soccer players and race cars are evil and hope for the best. Huh? Oh, you know what I wouldn't like to play? What's it called? The thing with the trains?
Mighty Express.
Mighty Express. Yeah, no. By the way, Paw Patrol, Peppa Pig, all of that is banned.
Yeah.
He doesn't know that exists, so that's convenient. So yeah, Mighty Express. What do you do? I don't know. This adventure is a little bit railroady. See, because they're
trains, yes.
That's a good joke, you're laughing.
Okay. What people might not know that Mighty Express is about trains.
Horrible trains.
Yeah.
I mean, not as ugly as Thomas the... What is it called? Engine?
Thomas the Engine, yeah.
But still horrible, and I hate them. And one of them is an architect, and he should tell his clients to beat it. Any more game mastering planned in the future?
Well, I'm going to GM a game of Judge Dredd, as I mentioned earlier. I have an idea for a scenario for Vampire, but I need to find time to read the book.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
I know, or at least play.
To, yeah, you need to play it with someone and then have a feel of the rules, because jumping straight in the rules, I don't think it's going to happen.
No, yeah, especially I'm not really good at reading rules.
It's a big book. I don't know, give us a summary. Like a 3-page summary of the rule.
I really like the DRC Dice 1-page RPG this weekend, so I might look into more of these maybe for my group.
I think you should try the classic Honey Heist.
I've thought about that.
You know what would be nice to play is a game like the Final Lap game we played, based on For the Queen.
Yeah.
There's one based on She-Ra and the Princesses of Power called For the Honor. But you know, this system of you pull cards and you have a question and then you need to answer the question. I think that would be quite appropriate for a child because there's no system. You pull there's a system within the card, but there's no dice roll. There's no mechanics to remember. Just need to answer the question you picked from the deck and try to remember what you did before. And if you don't, and that's fine, I guess.
Yeah, we could try that.
What's actually on your wish list of games that you'd like to try?
I mean, there's not really new games I am really bad at knowing what's new out there or haven't tried yet. The ones I do want to do again, Alien, which I played at the last Dragon Meet, and Nephilim, my first love-hate.
You want to go back to Nephilim? Yeah, I should run some someday, but
I'm trying to look at our books in the library, but
Nephilim is weird because I'd like to go back, but at the same time, I've sort of moved away this sort of system. Yeah, I'd like to, but yeah.
I don't know, there's Dragon's Conquer America.
You want to play all the games I got on Kickstarter? Which, there are not that many.
No, you're good. I'm always, and that's why I also love going to conventions, is looking what's on offer and trying new stuff.
As a child of the 70s, I'm all but forgotten. And I just want to get through this. They say with age comes a greater wisdom, but I feel like I'm slipping down, like I'm slipping down. And we don't know how far we've come. And we don't see how much it's changed, see how much I've changed for you. Child of the 70s, I'm going kicking, screaming. And I have not enough to say to you. Bon voyage, I'm going on a journey. And life is what I make of it. I'm gonna make it work. We don't know how far we've come, and we have nothing but the time, nothing but the time. Nowhere is the only thing we have in common. Nowhere is the only thing we have in common. Child of the 70s, I'm no longer with it. And all these trends have passed me by, trends have passed me by. We don't know how far we've gone. And all these things are just too hard, things are just too hard. As a child of the 70s, I'm no longer with it.
Well, I guess it's time then for our final question.
Yes.
What are you reading? What are you gonna read? What are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading Witches Abroad by Terry Pratchett.
That's not your first read of Witches Abroad, is it?
No, I'm actually, since the beginning of the year, I'm restarting doing the Weird Sisters series. So there was Equal Heights, then there was Weird Sisters, and then now Witches Abroad.
Which is about food. I love some segments. What fine dining is actually is, or local traditional dining versus big feast, which are actually disgusting.
Well, I haven't been there yet, but they do mention like that one witch that dies at the beginning. She liked to go abroad and then she would make curries and people didn't like eating it. I've been reading some Haruki Murakami, which has been really interesting because there was an allusion to the turtle with the elephant on its back carrying the world. And I thought, well, okay, Haruki Murakami making allusion to Terry Pratchett, but then I googled it and then there was a Reddit article saying, no, this is actually something that predates
Terry Pratchett. Yeah, I didn't know that either. Because it's so specific and weird that, yeah, I thought it would be something which he made up, but actually he's referencing something older.
Yes. And also the Murakami book that references that is Wild Cheap Chase, and that came out a year before Pratchett wrote his first book. So,
my own, what am I reading? As usual, I'm cheating. I'm not reading anything. I mean, I guess I'm reading Brindlewood Bay, the game by Jason Cordoba, which I really love and might be my next project, to do a carved in Brindlewood project afterward. But more seriously, now at the moment, I'm watching Disney Plus with you. We finished with WandaVision. Oh, we're also watching MasterChef at the moment.
WandaVision, MasterChef, Mandalorian.
And Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yes.
Which I like. It's not the same as WandaVision. I mean, that the charm also is that they're all going to be different. And I prefer that they make five which are different. And I really like three of them. And don't find my thing, two of them. But this one, I like. I mean, I love all the characters. Even before the show, I was really into them. And The Mandalorian, it feels so much like the old role-playing game. I don't find season two is as good. I think there's sometimes a bit too much fan service. It's a bit like the final episode of season one. It becomes more like Star Wars Rebels or the Clone Wars, the animated shows, than it is from Rogue One. Because The Mandalorian is kind of in that spectrum between the two. And season two even goes further in that there's still scenes I really like and really makes me want to play the role-playing game again. But fan service stuff, and as soon as Jedi show up, I tune out. I'm really not interested. And Ashoka, what I saw of her, I didn't really watch the Clone Wars because, again, it's not my thing. Ashoka in the Clone Wars, she seemed interesting because she was a bit rebellious and cool. And she was sort of the one saying things how they were. Or at least that's how I perceived her. And the Mandalorian, she's like a total doozy, like all Jedis. And we cannot help to watch this and compare that what it would be like to run this in a game. And that's what the game master has for you, or what happened. And it's like, yeah, great. We went all this way and you are useless.
Yeah,
you're not helpful. You're just like, I am so cool. And you're like, ugh.
Yeah, that episode was a bit of a bummer. Like, oh, I will help you if you do this for me. Oh, actually, I'm not going to help you. Can't take him.
Give your word. Well, I guess it would suck if I was the Mandalorian who keep his words, or Boba Fett who keep his words for reasons.
Yeah.
But I'm just a wandering Jedi who apparently is totally useless about anything, because for sensitive people and Jedi are supposed to be gone, and you find a youngling.
And you don't want to train him.
Yeah, and you're just going to leave him with a Mandalorian who was supposed to be the enemies of the Jedi. And just like, you know what? You should keep care of that one. It's like, it's not like she's running off to do something important.
I mean,
she's after Admiral Thrawn. Okay, right. I don't know, priorities. It's like, and she doesn't seem conflicted. She just seemed like, yeah, didn't like it. But last episode, there were some dark troopers. That was cool. Admiral Thrawn, that would be nice. There was a Gozenti cruiser, which is a cruiser I gave away as a starting point of a campaign when I tried, last time I tried to run Star Wars D6. There's a lot of stuff which I'm still into. I'm glad we see less Mandalorian. That was my only issue with season one. Started with a lot of Mandalorians, like a half a dozen or maybe a dozen of them. But yeah. What are you gonna read?
Well, after this, I have one more book on my pile of books. It's Kafka on the Shore by Haruki Murakami. I have a new principle, is that if I'm not into a book, I just switch to another book. Because what I usually end up doing is not reading. And this year, I really want to read more. So if there's like a book that doesn't spark my interest anymore,
I should try finish the book I started on holiday. I quite liked it, but yeah, when I'm not on holiday, more difficult to read for me.
Which one was that?
It was one which, I think 15th century Italy. It's called The Orphans of Venice, I think. I picked it up randomly at the bookshop in the little place where we were on holiday, and I didn't have that much choice. Just picked this one. It's quite thick. Yeah, that's the sort of thing which makes me want to run Nephilim again.
Okay.
So that's good. Because it's all about being in a historical setting like this. I should finish also that thing which Xani kept recommending. I read the short stories. I really like them. And now there's the big stories. Gagner la guerre.
Okay.
By Jaworski.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pity it's not available in English because it's quite good, I find.
So what are you going to read?
What am I going to read? Staring at my library of books. I don't think I'm going to read per se anything. The other day I launched, because I'm always looking for stuff to watch without you, although I don't have that much time to do so, but a show called Invincible. It's an animated show. It's yet another thing with superheroes, but it's not so much the case in the first episode, but from what I understand, I wonder if it's made by Robert Kirkman, the guy who did The Walking Dead, but I might be wrong. It's one of those postmodern takes on superheroes. So the main character is the son of a Superman, if you will. It's a complete separate world from Marvel and DC. It's its own world. But you look at the character, there's a woman, she's like Thor. There is a character who's like the Flash. The father of the main character is like the Superman of the world. And he's about to reach puberty and get his own powers. And he looks up to his Superman-like father figure. But I know things take a dark twist, like his father is actually a bad person, despite being the hero of the world. So things gonna happen, and it's gonna become still high on colors, but at the same time, things with a dark twist. But I've heard it's quite good, so I...
So what is this? Is this a comic book or a series?
It was a comic book, and now it's an animated show on Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to catch a new season of Harley Quinn also. That was really good. That was really nice. So, yeah, and we're going to watch The Name of the Rose this weekend for film studies. So, there you go. And otherwise, I'm busy with Paris Gondo, The Life-Saving Magic of Inventoring, available on Dearlist Itch.io store. Anything else to add?
No, I think that's it. Thank you for listening.
Well, thanks, yeah. And thanks for sitting down with me and recording this. I hope people enjoy. Please contact us back with your experience with your children and maybe your advice on what we should or should not do with our son in order to make sure that
he follows the geek path.
He follows the geek path, which could be he could multi-class.
He could
multi-class. A lot of us multi-class nowadays. Anyway, thanks everyone. See you next month, and in the meantime,
have good games.
This episode included Paranoia by Glitz, About What I'm Missing by Lesser Beings, The Group by The New Monitors, Child of the 70s by Derek Clegg, and of course Salta of Rango, or theme song by Bonded or All. You can find all these songs and download them for free on the freemusicarchive.org. The logo of the Rollist podcast is designed by Rollin Kearns, and you can find it on face masks, notebooks, stickers, apparels, and whatnot on the TeePublic store of the Rollist podcast. Please do go check my first game, now available on itch.io, Paris Gondo, The Life-Saving Magic of Inventoring. It's been playtested already with 100 or so players, and I must say, everyone had great fun playing it, as far as I am aware. So I really recommend you go check it out. Currently, what's available is the text-only version. It was part of a itch funding to finance hiring a graphic designer, and we met that goal. We already sold for more than $500 of this game. So a graphic designer is hired. That's Francita Soto, who's a very talented graphic designer from Chile. She's working on Brinkwood and a bunch of other exciting games. And she's busy improving the look of all of that and include art. I already purchased a front and back cover by Buddy Hartley, who I recommend to go check out on Instagram. There should hopefully be even more art in the interior, which I still need to purchase though. And about that, you should not wait for the new version to purchase Paris Gondo, because if you buy it now, the cost, those $5, which a copy of the text-only edition of Paris Gondo costs, will be deducted, if you buy it, from a potential future purchase of the game with the nice layout and the art and so on. And the game actually is ready for you to play. It's got everything you need. The text is finalized. It was edited by Chris S. Sims, who is a veteran of Dungeons & Dragons. He has worked on the Player's Handbook for D&D 3.5, D&D 4th Edition, D&D 5th Edition. And he also worked on Acquisition Incorporated for Dungeons & Dragons. So yeah, he give that final touch to the text, which is, I think, chef kiss. So yeah, go ahead, go on itch.io. There's a link, actually there's several, there are links everywhere around the description of this episode, which you can click. And if you follow the description of the episode, you click the clicky link, you will end up on our brand new website. My brother finished the design and the deployment, and I'm very happy with the way it looks. I think it showcases much better our past episodes, and they are easier to find. You can click on them by categories. It looks quite nice, and yeah, I would love to have more feedback about our new website. And the website was made possible thanks to the contribution of enthusiastic listeners to the show who support the Ruralist via Patreon. So a big thank you to all of you there. There are more things which will happen with Patreon in the near future, which I need to set in motion. But yeah, go. If you like what I do, please consider supporting me. Even just a single dollar per month really goes a long way in encouraging me to continue create this content for all of you. Another way to support the show, of course, is through a review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser or any podcaster platform of your choice. And subscribing also is super important. So please do that. And otherwise, just keep on listening. It makes me very happy to see the number of views and downloads on the files every month. They've been growing a bit lately. So that sparks joy in me. Beyond that, the lockdown is somewhat lifted here in London, and I arranged a couple interviews to be recorded in person, so hopefully we will have more guests and more exciting things coming next month, but I'm not entirely sure. It's not recorded yet, so I prefer not to jinx it and keep that a bit of a mystery till next month. So see you then, and in the meantime, have good games!
Solta o frango e vem com a gente.
Nós é tipo bem Jesus, todo mundo a gente ama. Ainda mais se for gatinha, rola até levar pra cama. A gente topa tudo, sapatão e bigoduto. Na hora do piriri, cai em mim outra travesti.
Vai, batuque!
Rolê, rolê, rolê. Solta o frango e vem com a gente. Rolê, rolê, rolê.
Hey Callum, do you know which moment I dreaded the most during the week and now it's become my favorite?
No, tell me about that.
It's meal planning.
Oh, meal planning. Yeah, that was hard. I tried to help you with that, but I was bad. We got all these recipes, but I would pick the recipe, but we could not agree on which recipe. And then I would make the list of the groceries, which you still had to input online to have them delivered.
Then there would be something missing and we had to go back to the shop or we forgot to add an ingredient.
Yeah, I'm so thankful this is over, thanks to Gusto.
Now in 2 minutes, we've chosen the recipes for the week.
Yeah, and we got them delivered at our door in environmentally friendly packages. And everything is there in portions and no situation when you have too much cheddar. Usually you have it, not enough. Or you're missing that spice or you bought a full pot of it and it's turning bad in your cupboard.
No more curry paste looking at you in the fridge.
Or miso. We got so much miso. I need to make some miso soup with that.
And the recipes are really tasty. It's been really a treat to have dinner.
MasterChef, it made me want to cook again, but I didn't have the time and energy to do so. But thanks to Gusto, I can cook for my family with flavors from around the world. Like, what was this dish we really enjoyed?
Chorizo crumb tacos?
Yeah, I'm going way too long. These ads. We need to practice.
Okay.
But we are not sponsored by Gusto.
No, this is not an ad, unfortunately.
Well, it is a bit. But yeah, Gusto can sponsor us, maybe. I need to check the copyright things with the free music I use. But I will include in the description of this episode a link.
Yes, a friend link. You can get a discount on your first box, 50%.
And we get £15.
Yes, and you get still, I think, 30% off the next 3 boxes that you order.